Welcome back to the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kessner.
And this is Claire Kaplan. Before we get started, I want to remind our listeners that sometimes our discussions in the podcast can be difficult. Not always, but often it sometimes can be, especially for survivors of trauma. So we encourage all of you to care for your safety and well-being. Please reach out for emotional support from family or friends, a counselor if you have one, or a hotline. And you can find additional resources on the Take Back the Night Foundation website, and we'll give you that address at the end of the podcast.
Thanks so much, Claire. And today, our amazing guest is incredibly talented and has been in the film world and a lot of other spaces and doing excellent work to help survivors. Her name is Emma Fitzpatrick. Emma, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks. And if you could, we always like to learn a little bit about our guests, like where you grew up, education, anything that you could share about your bio and background.
Yeah, I grew up in Ohio in a small town called Marion in northern Ohio. I came down to Nashville, Tennessee to go to college many moons ago, and I studied musical theater, had a bachelor's of music in that. I traveled the world for a couple of years singing in musical theater shows, and then I have spent the last 15 plus years in Los Angeles and New York working in film and television. And I also have a band and write music. And so I've been able to integrate those things pretty well over the last 15, 20 years. And very proudly and recently, I'm one of the newest board members of Take Back the Night. So really excited to be bringing all that together.
Thank you so much, Emma. And we are absolutely delighted to have you on the board for the foundation and looking forward to the excellent, amazing, world-changing work that we're going to do, including the Beatbox event, the Kenya event. There's so many great new projects that we have going on, and maybe we'll get to those. But most importantly, I think it's so cool that you have a whole movie called Take Back the Night. Tell us how that came about. What was the idea? What is the whole movie about? Where can we watch it? Like the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I made a monster movie actually called Take Back the Night. It came out in 2022. It's a lower budget horror film, so those tend to take a little bit longer. It probably took 5 years to make from conception to premiere, but you can still find it on Amazon and Roku and Tubi, I think. But it's a monster movie that plays out as an allegory for victim blaming in rape culture. And we borrowed the name Take Back the Night truly as an homage to this organization, purely for the resonance that Take Back the Night has had for decades, you know, and the importance of that rally cry and the historical significance that, you know, we still have to be out there marching and demanding safe spaces, bodily autonomy, the basic right to feel safe in your own skin. And again, I'm so proud to be working with this organization and continuing that legacy and good work.
Emma, what were 3 to 4 of the top rape myths that you tackled in the film? And how did you go about that?
The myths. Yeah, so we focused on sort of what happens after the attack and the systematic unraveling of one's support system. Because we were just thinking, well, what's scarier than that? You know, you've been through this horrific ordeal. So we really were focusing on the horrors of what happens after you're a victim. Yeah. So sort of this idea that what you're wearing or your mental health status or if you were intoxicated has any bearing on whether or not you are a victim. We also focused on what it looks like to be a victim of trauma. And a lot of people don't know what that looks like or what it can look like. And often with rape victims, you know, you'll see them in an attempt at coping mechanisms, engaging in what psychologists refer to as high-risk behaviors. So the implication that the way that somebody behaves afterward has any effect on whether or not they were attacked either. You know, you often see like heavy drug or alcohol use or sexual promiscuity, disassociation. So somebody acting completely normal and not traumatized enough. And all of these things affect whether or not a victim is believed, unfortunately. And that can lead to as far as the case not even being picked up or the prosecutor not taking it to court. So We wanted to just address these things to make it clearer to victims that there's no right way to be a victim, but also to friends and family and the community that there's a better way to support victims of violent crimes and especially of sexual assault.
That sounds fantastic, Emma. And I'm curious, like, how you prepared and taught yourself all about it. I mean, you wrote the whole film. So yeah. How did you, I guess not that you couldn't have studied, but I'm curious, what did you use to inform yourself? Did you, you know, talk at rape crisis centers to survivors? Did you read lots of books? Like, where did you garner all of your ideas and information?
Yeah, my co-writer and the director of the film, Gia Elliott, we met in a feminist book club at the time. This probably would have been in like 2015 or something. And these were just, you know, they were themes that were coming up a lot. I read about like the neurobiology of trauma, just like for fun. It's just something that interests me. I think if I hadn't studied music and arts, I probably would have gone into psychology. It's just something that I'm naturally curious about. And when we decided this is the subject matter we were going to use, I had actually just listened to a podcast. I think it was on This American Life, and it was about this woman who had been horrifically assaulted, and then through the systematic unraveling of her support system, like the police, her family, her peers, the judicial system, she ended up retracting her statement and even being fined by the police department for false reporting. And then fast forward, I think it was months later or years later, I don't even remember, but someone was attacked in a nearby state, and they caught the guy and they found all of these Polaroids that he had taken of all of his assaults. It ended up being like a litany of women that had been attacked. And she was among them, among these Polaroids. And they were able to identify her. I think he made them like their driver's licenses on their chest or something. It's really sick. She was, of course, found to be completely truthful in everything that she had said. And so this was the story that we based it upon, you know, and we kind of went through the beats of how this happened to her, how common this is, you know, for all of these factors to completely undermine someone's story. You know, she was, I think, probably had some mental health issues. She was in and out of halfway houses. So she wasn't like anyone's favorite victim, but it was no less a horror that had happened to her. And if they had pursued it, could have potentially stopped a bunch of other people from being assaulted. So we sort of based the structure on that story. We did a ton of research, obviously reading books, and statistics really played in. And I think the more we learned, the more it colored the detail and the nuance of the story, and the more horrific it became, honestly.
Amazing.
That's a great way of describing how a film is sort of created in a way, because inspired by certain things or certain events. And if it's well done, you know, that's research done. It's interesting that you used a horror or a monster, you know, as a description, as a way of an allegory for this whole situation. What has been the response to your film?
The response has been really touching. We actually started out wanting to make this as a tool to take on a college campus tour, interestingly enough. And I think it's cool that the name plays into that even now. But we initially were just trying to educate and reach a bunch of people, especially in a vulnerable time in their lives. But I don't think that I had really anticipated, you know, it's, you hope people will watch your movie. You hope that they will like it. It's really vulnerable to make a movie about subject matter that is so important, but also so sensitive. You know, you really want to get it right. You really want to tell the story in a way that is true. And, but also we wanted to entertain. The reason we chose a monster movie is because we felt like it was a little bit more palatable in some ways to talk about this subject matter. So you get your adrenaline rush and you get the fun of being scared, but then at the core of it is some really important subject matter that hopefully gets people thinking. And I think most impactful for me was just hearing from survivors who said, "You nailed it. This is what it felt like." So that was really moving to be on. I had forgotten, you know, that could even happen. I was mostly just thinking I wanted to get to people so that they would learn how to support survivors better. And the film itself ended up being a support in a way. So that's been really cool.
That's amazing. That's wonderful that that's happened. And how are you, as you mentioned college campuses, how are you distributing it, or has someone helped you with that process?
We ended up getting a distribution deal. We did a festival run in 2021, I guess, and we won a bunch of accolades at like horror film festivals. This is also a largely female identifying led cast and crew. And we chose that. This was pre Me Too even. It was like right before Me Too. So all of those things were boiling up, and we wanted to give female identifying people a space to be heard and to work and express themselves creatively. So just, I think by luck, that happened to be, especially in the festival circuit, that happened to be to really work for us. People were looking for female voices. And so we did really well at festivals. We ended up getting a distribution deal and having a small theater release for the premiere, and then just going straight to, you know, Amazon and all this, the streaming networks. The college campus tour would have been great, and I don't think it's out of the question even now, but it's very cool that it became something so much bigger and available to so many more people.
Can I ask, Emma, then, in terms of college campuses, you know, we can talk visionary, but of course now we are starting chapters of Take Back the Night all over the planet. And tons of college campuses, that's one of our main outreaches this year and next year for one of our primary goals, and high schools too. Would you say the film, what age group would you say, is it good for high school? Is it good for college? What would you recommend?
I mean, it depends. It's not graphic in a sexual nature at all. You know, like I said, the monster is an actual monster and it's a metaphor, just depending how scared people want to be. But I think, you know, the subject matter is sensitive. So it just depends. That might not be, some parents might not find that appropriate, but I do think high school and especially college, it's an incredibly vulnerable time, especially those first couple of semesters, and just really instilling, you know, rape culture is still a thing. And I think one of our ideas was to do the opposite and have, you know, hero culture be the cool new thing, and that being a bystander that would intervene would be the normal, and protecting the most vulnerable around us would be hip, hopefully. I don't know. I think it's as good of an age as any, and it's a hard reality, but the national statistic is like, every 68 seconds, a person is sexually assaulted in this country. I think it touches everyone, unfortunately, and it surely touches someone that everyone knows.
How do you think those who identify as male would react to watching the film?
I mean, we've heard from quite a few who, you know, this has not been their experience being the victim of an assault. And I think the reaction has generally been thoughtful and, oh, I never thought of it that way. Or, you know, you're trying to instill empathy in people, and you do that by educating and showing that this can look all different kinds of ways, and that it doesn't matter what your privilege or your position in the world is, this kind of violence is still prevalent, unfortunately.
Right. Absolutely. And I guess the only other thing I'm thinking of right now in terms of reachability in the film before we talk about what's next in the world of Emma, you know, I think as you were making it and then going through the PR, did you have anyone give you a hard time or say it was all wrong from either end of the spectrum? Was there any pushback at all, or did you find that the world was ready for it?
I think that, I mean, Me Too, it took so long to make this film that Me Too movement had happened. You know, Hollywood was starting to take women seriously or insist upon female identifying voices and stories. So in a way, we were really in a great position, and the industry was really primed for it. I think the country was primed for it. I don't generally pay attention to negative reviews just because, you know, it's art. You'll find something wrong with everything. And not that I only want to hear positive things, but I think it's, to me, it's more it's more just, did we connect with somebody? You know, I'm happy to hear that. And I'm grateful to hear that. If you didn't like it, you know, turn it off. Don't watch it. So
great attitude. I love that. Do you have any other questions, Claire, about the film?
I'm just trying to think. You said you wanted to use sort of an allegory to make this story sort of feasible. And the monster seems great. And I haven't seen the film, but I am definitely going to look for it. In the writing process, which is something, I'm also a writer, so it's interesting to me. When you were working on it together, what was that process like when you were coming across a way of, since you use metaphors, did you have some difficulty with finding ways of having your characters go about what happens in the story and then think, no, this doesn't fit what we're trying to accomplish? Did you have to do a lot of rewriting? What was that process like for you?
There was definitely a lot of revision and rewriting, especially once we got money. You know, it was a small amount, but it was more than zero. And so, you know, our options opened up to us a little bit about what we could accomplish with it. So I think that just made the story way more fleshed out. It gave us the gift of time, a little bit more time. I think, like I said, the more we learned, the more informed and like realistic I think it became. But truly, we were just trying to paint with all this metaphor within that you need to paint a real person. Like you need to connect with our main character, our heroine. Her name is Jane Doe. Everyone else in the film is just the sister, the reporter, the detective. They're all people that, you know, you need to care about and you need to care about what happens to them. But the anonymity, in a way, lent itself to if it's everyone and it's anyone. So I think that was maybe the biggest challenge with writing was, and I played the main character as well. So just bringing like a real authenticity and like humanness to this. I think that the monster writes itself because it's easy to see this problem as a monster that is hunting down. You know, the idea is that after the assault is the greatest horror and it hunts you continuously the rest of your life. And the only way to get healing and get away from the monster is to face it, is to insist upon your truth, and is usually a lifelong journey. But I think that part of it wrote itself because it's this sort of unending force, dark force that sneaks up on you when you least expect it. And hides in the shadows. And so all of those metaphors just really came easily, you know.
Emma, did you just say that you played Jane Doe?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm in the movie.
Yeah. No, I wrote it and I played it.
Our audience, our listeners have got to know that part.
Yeah.
Why didn't you say that? By the way, Katie, I wrote it. I produced it. I am in it. I am the whole thing.
It's funny even when we were shooting the film, and I do this with most characters that I play, honestly, but I think this was one of the first times that I had produced anything. And so when speaking about Jane, it was always third person. It was always she, her, what she's doing. This is how she feels. Even though you're like living the character for years at a time. But I think because I had to have eyes on the other side of it too, it was a gift and a curse, but it allowed me to like remove myself from it and look at it from a different perspective. So
that raises a question for me. And I know since you were the producers, did you also direct or is there a different director?
I did not. My co-writer, her name's Gia Elliott. She directed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But in the years that I worked at the Sexual Assault Crisis Center in LA, we would occasionally have production companies call us and send over an actress or two or three who had just been shooting rape scenes repeatedly all day long, say in the soaps, and were so traumatized. And I'm wondering, now, of course, there's intimacy coordinators on set, but those didn't exist then. But I'm wondering how, for you personally, even though, you know, you're not a survivor, but this process can be difficult, how that impacted you when playing the role and then having to shoot scenes over and over.
I think luckily, the movie was not largely being attacked. It was more being the aftermath, feeling hunted. But I think that just in general, being a woman or a female identifying person is to understand otherness. And, you know, I have a lot of privilege as a middle class cis white woman, but I have myself experienced discrimination and harassment, the fear of what it means just living in your own body. And I think that those aggressions, they do instill a sort of empathy in you and a desire to protect other people. So I think at a base level, you know, as an actor, you're just trying to get to the core emotion. And if the core emotion is a fear of living in your own skin and what that brings, the danger that brings you, I understand that on some base level. And then two, Jane's main motivation is to protect everyone else and keep this from happening again. And so I think that I can relate to that easily. And she, you know, she becomes this vigilante spirit, and her desire is just to get someone, anyone, everyone to believe that this, that monsters are real. So I get that on a core level, you know, as far as what it felt like, what that experience was like. Yeah, I'm not someone that like can cry on cue. I have to like actually be in a dark headspace. I think that a lot of actors have drug and alcohol problems because it's really hard to decompress from allowing yourself to be really emotionally raw and vulnerable, because your job is to tell the truth. And if you're not completely invested in this person, and if you don't believe the things that you're saying as them, any audience person can sniff that out, right? Like, we all have a bullshit meter. And I think that's true of art as well as anything else. Yeah, it's exhausting. It definitely takes me a while to bounce back. Like, I have to give myself some recovery time, and I think that's okay. But fortunately or unfortunately, I've been in a lot of horror films in the last 15 years, and I've learned how to calibrate. A physicality of being afraid is truly exhausting when you do that for 12 hours a day or whatever, you know. Faking afraid is just as obvious as anything else. And so I think it's just one of my tools in my tool belt, is being able to get myself there and then understanding how to unwind and detach. And it is an honorable profession, I think, in that regard, that people are willing to do that to themselves for the sake of human connection, you know?
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Emma, as we move into your next chapter, aside from going around the country with the movie, perhaps as a speaker and talking about it, I think that would be amazing. We can try and see if that's possible with our chapters. But what about your next step? What do you have something on the burner now? What are you going to...
I actually made a film this last February with some beautiful female identifying filmmakers as well. Actually, the woman that played the sister in Take Back the Night, her directorial debut, she's a fantastic writer and an actress, but her directorial debut is a psychological thriller that is an homage to her mother's experience with dementia in their family. And so it's sort of a similar thing. It's like a horror film that has like a real heart and a message to it. I'm so excited to be a part of it. That there's three women in it. Patricia Heaton, who you might know from The Middle and Everybody Loves Raymond. She's basically America's mom for 30 years. She and this beautiful actress named Catherine Parker and myself got to go to Oklahoma for a month and just play out this really beautiful, sad story. So they are going to start festival runs probably in the next couple of months. And so hopefully it takes about a year once you get it sold, I think. So hopefully in the next year or so, that'll be coming out.
Fantastic.
Great.
Well, we are excited about, you know, continuing the conversation at the Take Back the Night Foundation. And for our listeners, you know, Emma just joined us and we are delighted to have her. And maybe I can make a soft pitch for getting more involved for our listeners. If you don't know what's going on at Take Back the Night Foundation, we have an entire slew of online events. We have an event coming up for the beatbox community to protest harassment and assault in that community. We have another one. We're working with Kenya to do some outreach for gender-based violence there. We have chapters and events happening all over the country. Check out our global page, check out our chapters page, and then one-offs that a lot of people don't know about the foundation. We have just random, awesome humans doing Take Back the Night events. A woman who's, I think she's 71 years old and she lives in New Hampshire, and she does every year on her birthday, she runs the number of miles. Oh, it takes her a couple days, but she runs the number of miles for her birthday and raises money.
Wow.
Yeah, she's so cool. Yep, we've had bikers in Japan do bike every mile, raise a dollar. We've done all kinds of yoga events, Shine Your Light for yoga. So please, if you don't know much about the Take Back Night Foundation and you are one of our listeners and are just getting to know that part of what we do, please take a journey over on our website and check out some of the great ways. Most of them are free. So please don't hesitate to get more involved with the foundation. Claire, do you want to add anything about the Take Back Night Foundation?
You can definitely check out the resources at the Take Back the Night Foundation website. And the address is just takebackthenight.org. So very easy to remember. And we have resources there. We also have a legal support hotline. So if you have any need for legal advice or support, you can access it there. I would encourage everyone, from really cool, fun stuff to do through resources. You can find it on the website.
Thank you so much, Claire. And Emma, what a fabulous journey so far. And I can tell you have miles to go with your career and making change in the world happen. And I feel like you do so thoughtfully and accessibly and patiently, your own brand of activism. And we are so excited to have had you here to share a little bit of your journey around those important ways to make change that some people may not have considered. And you are clearly doing the work. And it's even more cool that you're not a survivor yourself, but you are there as a supporter and an activist on everyone's behalf. So we're just thrilled and honored that you made the movie and that you yourself are getting extremely involved with our movement and our foundation. So we are thankful to you. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
That was a beautiful button. I'm really grateful to be speaking with you guys and to be involved. Art for entertainment's sake is, it's completely necessary, but it is very gratifying to be able to use your gifts and your creativity to say something that really matters to you. And so I just feel very fortunate to be in this position and that it's led me to talking to you all. So thanks for having me today.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yep. Claire, anything else you want to close out for our listeners?
I would just like to remind everyone to take care of yourselves. Reach out for help and support if you can. And thank you to our listeners also for listening in today. Thank you to Emma for joining us. Thank you also to all our wonderful volunteers. This whole effort is completely done in a voluntary way, and it's their work that makes this possible. So just remember, at the end, self-care is essential to healing and thriving.
Thank you so much again, Emma and Claire. Have a great rest of your day. Our listeners, keep the journey going. Tune into another episode. Find strength and healing each and every hour, each and every minute. Take it one moment at a time. Thank you so much. Take care.